Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we welcome Neil Hallinan. Neil is a postural restoration credential trainer out of New Jersey. He has devoted his life to helping people resolve their own pain and spreading the science of Postural Restoration Institute, which is also known as PRI. Neil is also CSCS certified, and he's a licensed massage therapist, along with being a PRT. Getting your PRT is pretty difficult, so that's something to definitely be aware of with this podcast, is that PRI is an amazing system, and we wanted to have Neil on here to talk about how PRI changed his life and what he does now for other people that may be struggling with chronic pain or just pain in general. Neil has a very active YouTube channel where you can find out everything from the most basic level of PRI to more deeper complexities of what's going on with the asymmetries in the body and how that can affect all your systems. So I'm just very excited to have Neil on today. I've frequently communicated with him and I've met with him in the past, and he is a wealth of knowledge on PRI, but also just deeper information. So we loved recording this episode, and we know you're going to really enjoy it.
Okay. Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we have Neil Hallinan, and we are so excited to talk to you today. We're going to talk a little bit about your story and everything that you've been through. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and yeah, we'll go from there.
All right. So I will try to center my story around chronic pain, since we kind of just talked about chronic pain. Yeah. I am from New Jersey, suburban New Jersey, and I was always playing sports as I was young. I had two options when I was young: go outside and play sports or read books. No cable TV, no video games. So those were my two options. And so I went outside a lot. I was pretty athletic, all this normal sports, baseball, football, basketball. And when I was around 12 to 13 years old, that's when things started to go downhill physically.
Yeah.
So my freshman year of high school, which is always a difficult time period for most people anyway, that's when my ears started to ring. And I got tinnitus at 13. I remember exactly where I was, what night it was, what was happening. And I woke up the next morning and the ring in my ear, you know, sometimes when you're around loud music, you'll have some ringing and then it goes away the next day. Yeah. I woke up the next morning, the ring was still there. And of course that was a little bit upsetting, and well, it never went away, so I still have it. So that was the first issue with my body really going a not good direction. Around the same time, I had to give up pitching because my shoulder was so constantly painful that I would throw an inning and I would try to go to the water fountain after the inning and my arm would just be shaking violently. And of course, I was told it was tendinitis and it should go away. But it never did. So even to this day, I still can't. The one thing I can't do is throw. I can overhead press. I can do everything else, essentially. But the moment I throw, within 1 minute, whether it's a football or a baseball, my shoulder will still hurt. Then I started getting assorted muscle pulls, hamstring pulls, adductor pulls, shin splints. Sophomore year in high school, that was my first bout of lower back pain, which lasted months. And then that was just kind of my normal life. I always assumed it was just because I played a lot of sports.
Yeah.
And I just figured everyone felt pain and got hurt a lot. And even though I didn't always see people getting hurt, I just assumed everyone was in pain, not realizing that this was, oh, and then I got the plantar fasciitis. That, the first time I got plantar fasciitis was junior year during football season. That I remember. That was really painful also. Kind of resolved. Then college came and I did the normal college route, University of Maryland, big school, ACC, a lot of, you know, partying and all that. Junior year in college, I was playing basketball in the backyard of the fraternity house, landed slightly awkwardly, SI joint blew out. That was the first time I ever felt that SI joint pain. And if anyone ever has ever experienced it, you kind of don't forget the first time because it is so painful. And you know it's kind of your back and it's kind of your butt, but you're not sure exactly. You're like, it's kind of my butt, but not really my butt. And it's kind of my back, but not really my back. And all you know is it hurts and it stiffens up and you can't get dressed. You can't find a comfortable place to sit. You turn over in bed, your back hurts. You can't drive. You try to put your foot on the gas pedal and it starts to hurt. So it's miserable. And that started to happen quite consistently, particularly after college when I did IT work, which was death. I didn't want to do IT work, but I needed a job and, well, there you go. So I was doing IT work, sitting a lot, which made things worse, obviously. And I would start to get SI joint blowouts about between 2 and 4 times a year. And it would usually, the acute pain would last for about 7 to 10 days where I really wouldn't be able to do anything, get up, move. I'd be out of work. I would have to stay out of work for about 4 or 5 days. And then, you know, if you've had these SI joint issues, you know that residual stiffness and pain continues for at least another 2 weeks afterwards. And from my experience, I realized that even when the pain is gone, don't do anything. Because the pain's gone, but I realized I had to rest another 7 days until it was safe for me to work out or do whatever I wanted to do. On 9/11, I remember this clearly, that was when the plantar fasciitis came back.
9/11.
And I started to, I'm sorry?
9/11/2001 when, yeah. Wow, yeah. Okay.
That's when I started, so I was 23 at the time. And that's when I started to feel the pain in my feet come back. And it just got worse and worse and worse. So I had plantar fasciitis in both feet for about 4 years straight. That was a very miserable, so on top of the SI joint issues blowing out 2 or 3 times, between 2 and 4 times a year, plantar fasciitis, then I started getting neck spasms. And it would always be the most innocuous thing, like brushing. Imagine calling your boss in the morning and saying, I'm not gonna be able to come in, and say, well, what happened? Well, neck spasm, I really can't move. You know, it would always start in your mid-trap area, right inside the scapula, and you would feel that tweak, or I would feel that tweak, and you pause, and you say, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, don't move, maybe it'll go away, and it never does. And then it just starts to spread, and the whole thing just seizes up on you. And when you do that brushing your teeth, you know things are wrong. And so that was my, a couple times a year, I'd have these neck spasms. Of course, you can't move your neck, you can't move your head, you try to drive and you have to turn your whole body to look. And so that was my life until I found PRI. And I was already a trainer at that point. So luckily the plantar fasciitis started to resolve with when I found a book, which was revolutionary at the time, which was called Core Performance by Mark Verstegen. And he had this thing that's now called dynamic warm-ups, but he called them movement prep. And that was the first time I ever saw movement prep, which then became other people tried to claim as their own, but I'm pretty sure I had never seen it before him. And I couldn't even do those, which was not the workout. This was just the movement prep. And I would try that. The first time I tried some of his movement prep exercises, I just started to shake uncontrollably, shaking and sweating. I was so tight in my hips and my pelvis. But through doing them, my plantar fasciitis started to clear up a little bit. And I was then able to actually stand without intense pain for the first time in many, many years. So I started to feel better. And I made this connection between what I was doing and the fact that my feet were starting to feel better. And so I went into the train. I started to be more interested in training. And that's kind of how I got into training and quit IT and didn't know what I was really going to do, but I didn't have to support anyone else. So, you know, wasn't really that much of a risk.
Yeah. And how did you find PRI? Like, I guess going into your story, you found PRI and it really helped you.
Yes. Yeah.
It really was, helped you. And now you advocate, I think, for people that are, and what you're doing is amazing. You write blogs and your YouTube is unbelievable. And trainers like me can actually learn just from your page. So you obviously went into PRI and learned as much as you can. And so how did you find it?
Continuing education. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was it. See, I needed CEUs and I had read about them. This is the ironic thing. I read about PRI on Eric Cressy's.
Okay.
And he was going on and on about how he saw ranges of motion in the shoulder, because he, you know, he trains a lot of baseball players.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how, you know, he went to this PRI seminar and he saw shoulder range of motion change by like 40 degrees with like one breath. And I was like, who cares about breathing? So I had first read about it and I completely dismissed it because I was all about strength and conditioning. I was like, who cares about breathing? It's so simple. Like, yeah, we just breathe, you know? And so I put it to the side, and he went on in this blog post about like, it's the best money he ever spent, at least in that year. And so I had heard of them, but again, I just associated with breathing and I wasn't really that interested in breathing. I was more interested in pelvises and lower backs because that's what I had been dealing with the most at that point. And because at that point, my feet weren't really hurting anymore. But I knew I still had a pelvic issue. And actually, I was living in a pelvic tilt at that point because I was still having these SI joint issues and these nasty back spasms. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then I was looking through continuing education and they showed up on the list for the, you know, NSCA. And it was the myokinematic restoration course. I didn't know what myokinematic actually meant, but at least it said, you know, it's about how the lumbar spine, the pelvis, and the femur all kind of interact. Yeah. I said, well, I have that issue. And so I just took it. And within the first 10 minutes of the first home study, because that's what I did at first, thankfully I did home study, because if I had gone live, I would not have understood a thing.
Yeah.
James Anderson was the instructor, and he was just describing the typical left AIC patient. And he said something along the lines of, they have a psoas on the left side or a hip flexor on the left side. I can't remember exactly what I said, you know, that just doesn't quit. And I had been explaining myself to other people just kind of in that same language. My left hip flexors would not freaking turn off. I could not get them to relax no matter what I did.
Yeah.
And it was driving me nuts. And I had this tilted pelvis, which I was evening out with paper towels underneath my shoe. And it helped to even out my pelvis and get rid of the SI joint pain temporarily, but I can't live with paper towels. It wasn't going to be like a long-term fix. And at that moment, when he described it like that, and he said, these people are living with an asymmetrically positioned pelvis, mm-hmm. and that you have a bigger right diaphragm. What is that? A bigger right? You mean you have two diaphragms? And that was just mind blowing to me that no one ever in all my years of training, and I read everything religiously, including physical therapy books. And so still no one ever mentioned the fact that you have a bigger right diaphragm. And then when they go down, they break it down into why the mechanical advantage of the diaphragm will result in that left AIC pattern. I mean, it's one of the reasons that pattern exists, but it just, to me, that was just the missing piece. I was already drawn in and yeah. I never looked back.
You're already kind of feeling that, and it just kind of confirmed what you were already feeling. It wasn't like you had to convince yourself.
And that's the difference, I think, with me compared to when other people find stuff like this, they're not feeling it. Mm-hmm. My best clients are people who say, I watch your videos and I can feel my body the way that you're describing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so people are feeling things that they don't even know what it is, but people are telling them they're crazy. And then they find a video that talks about these patterns and this person says they're validated.
Yeah.
They don't know how to fix it and they can't even explain what's going on, but they're like, I feel my body twisting.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I was feeling it. And as anyone, you know, feeling something and knowing something intellectually are two different experiences. You can know something intellectually, but when you feel that, it's a whole different way of knowing something.
Yeah.
So both ways of knowing are great, but for my money, feeling is way better.
Yeah. You do.
It's much more real. 100%. Otherwise, it's still abstract.
Yes. You can't feel it. If you can't feel it, you aren't really like in it. You know, you're not passionate.
You're not living it. Yeah. You're not living it. It's just an abstract idea.
Yeah. This is wild.
So with the plantar fasciitis, I mean, it sounds like to me, it's like typically with chronic pain, at least that I have either experienced or have seen, it's kind of like playing whack-a-mole. It's like one thing hurts and then eventually that gets better, but that's because you've compensated to get away from that thing hurting and something else is going to start hurting. And then, you know, it just kind of like moves around and you're like, it's always something, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it's like for a lot of people. And a lot of people don't realize it. Like, so I'm an athletic trainer and I'm about to start physical therapy school in January. And like in our clinic, we have these patients that come in. It's like, they're coming in for, you know, their low back, and then they're coming in for their IT band. Then they're coming in for, you know, like their like ankle or something like that. And like, it's all the same cause. but we're just like playing whack-a-mole with their symptoms. Like, why don't we just attack the body as one? I mean, it's hard to do that in like, you know, the allopathic kind of model that our typical insurance based.
Yeah. And I'm not even in that world, so I don't even know about that. But yeah. I heard about that recently. Like, oh, someone said, oh, we can only treat one body part at a time. Yeah, oh no, my God.
Insurance companies will literally, like, they won't reimburse you if it's like, this is not, you're not working on the body part that we're working on. I mean, and it's because the insurance company that's looking at what you're doing isn't, they don't know the body.
They don't understand, no.
It's right. Money.
They just know how much money they're dishing out and people are paying a premium.
Sad.
They don't expect you that. But, and it's like, I mean, it makes sense from a business point of view because it's like these people are paying a premium and you would expect, you're like gambling pretty much. I'll explain some gambling to you. Insurance, you pay a certain amount and you're banking on not getting sick. And if you get sick and you start spending all this money, insurance is going to try to cut you off, obviously. Right. Like, you know,
they want to make a profit.
Money off people. Right, exactly. And so it's like, it seems like it's really limiting like how actually well people can get and how like holistically they can understand their body as like a full system. And I feel like it's more empowering to understand it from a full system standpoint anyway. I mean,
you have to.
Like you never really understand why something happens and it's more scary then as well. And with chronic pain, I feel like also like the fact that like it's always there and you're like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, am I broken? Is this like the end, you know? And if you don't understand what's going on, then it's much more scary. Whereas if you understand kind of the nature of something, then it's like, you can kind of, I don't know. It's less scary, at least to me.
You can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, from what I've heard, someone getting a diagnosis of, even if it's like some horrible disease, allows them to live more easily than when they didn't know. Mm-hmm. Like just knowing what it is allows you to then deal with it. But if you don't know what it is, it's that constant tension of what the hell is going on with my body.
Figure it out. Yep.
And I understand that. I mean, that was my life. I couldn't imagine when I was in my mid-20s, I did not want to live a long life because I couldn't imagine living like I was living for another 60 something years.
That's crazy.
I had the body, I felt like I was 70 when I was 26.
Do you think it was just miserable? It was a compounding, like, I mean, you sound like you're really active as a kid. And it was sort of like, I mean, obviously, I don't know if you struggled with any like, you know, mental illness, like depression from being taken away from your lifestyle.
Depression, definitely, yeah.
Which, I mean, it will totally affect how your body feels as well. Do you think there's a connection? I mean, do you think that was a part of it?
It's hard to, yes, I do. Do I think it was the cause of the chronic pain?
Mm.
No, I think it was my visual system.
Yeah.
Because the word grounded and ungrounded have a very significant meaning in my life, and anyone who gets to a certain level with postural restoration, once you can move past the terms of bones and muscles and movements, you're gonna realize that it comes down to a human has to stand up and walk forward and not fall down. And they have to be grounded properly to do that. It's such an abstract term until you feel it. So, if you know any PRI and you know there's these labels for patterns that someone might be in or a position they might be in. So if you take a simple PEC, and most people, if they've taken any courses, they'll know that a PEC is going to have a pelvis that's rotated forward on both sides. They're just extended and the rib cage is up. All right, both sides, it's just extension. Extension means absolutely nothing to me. It's a useless term. Now, it's not useless. It's not useless. All it means is these people are not grounded.
Right.
If they were grounded, they wouldn't be an extension. My visual system ungrounded me. It wasn't my muscles that were the issue. It was my brain that couldn't perceive space, which then took me away from the ground. Because once you are no longer grounded, you start to use your neck for everything, including breathing. And the more you breathe with your neck, you're gonna pull your rib cage up. When you bring your rib cage up, you move forward, your lower back arches, you are now a PEC. And that ungrounds you. So it doesn't matter what ungrounds you. Once you become you could get ungrounded because you squat too much, because you deadlift too much. And you're going into extension so much, you lose your diaphragms, you're so tight in your back, your neck over-engages again, and you just get pulled up and away from the ground. And so many people will have those high arched feet. They'll feel their weight on the outside of the right foot, and maybe even on the outside of the left foot. They're gonna be ungrounded. So all of these things are just ways to describe someone who's ungrounded. So for me, if you can't use the ground to move you forward, you're going to be compensating. You're going to be using hip flexors, lower back, neck, everything is compromised. So when I went in to see Ron and Dr. Wise last summer, Dr. Wise is the, Ron is the founder. Dr. Wise is the was the neuro-optometrist out there. She looked at my tests and my visual tests, which to my normal optometrist, she just said, you're farsighted.
Yeah.
My test meant nothing to her in any grand scheme of things. Dr. Wise looked at me and said, how are you a functional human? Said, well, you didn't know me before I found PRI because I really wasn't a functioning human. She's like, anyone at your age, because I was at, I guess I would have been 42 when I went out there. I basically went 40 years with uncorrected vision. I didn't know I couldn't see. No one else knew, didn't. I mean, I saw, but I was creating tons of tension through my cranium, through my eye muscles to see because I couldn't really see very well. So I was basically squinting my whole life without realizing. And she was just like, you should not be a functioning human with a visual system that has been this dysfunctional for so long. And so what ungrounded me originally was this visual system that could not see properly. And the amount of tension I created obviously would tighten up my neck and pull you up and away from the ground. And now you're compromised, you're extended. You can't rotate properly, you can't shift from side to side. You lose your frontal plane because that's the whole point of extension. And so, you know, extension to me, again, comes down to groundedness. Because once you have someone sense something from the ground that they never felt, recheck those tests. They have that full range of motion, I can guarantee you. No, I can't guarantee you, but I'm pretty sure that the majority of people, when you set, get them to sense the proper things, that range of motion on 80% of the people will clear up completely.
So what was it that, I mean, was it that you were born with bad vision or was it something that happened or?
I was farsighted. So the issue is this, and it's interesting when you think about it. So I saw distance, I couldn't see up close.
Oh, that's interesting. And you were like that as a kid?
Yeah.
Oh,
but
wow.
The issue is, like when I was young, and my parents weren't those people that are going to bring you to the doctor for everything.
Yeah.
So I had old school parents in that realm. It's like,
My parents were the same. I get it.
Yeah. Everything was growing pains and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, but you know, when you're young and you're in elementary school, you go to the nurse's office to read the chart. That was not a problem for me because I was farsighted. I could see distance without much of an issue. Mm. I couldn't see up close, but I didn't know that and no one noticed it because apparently from what I think this is correct, that kids have an astounding ability to compensate up close, but your ability to compensate for up close vision, you know, you have to bring your eyes together and converge, right? Your ability to do that, to cheat, peaks at age like 12 or 13, and then it's all downhill from there. So kids, even if they can't see up close really well, you won't know because they can cheat so easily.
They're working really hard to converge their eyes to see better up close.
So
yeah, but they don't even know because
right.
it's so easy for kids, yeah. But
right.
then your ability to do that starts to decline with age. Like, and it really doesn't last very long, like 12 or 13, and I think it starts to decline at that point.
Most adults that I know, I mean, I remember when my parents like literally be like, look at this, Dad! And he's like, oh, you know, like, get it away from my face. I mean, that's most adults.
Yeah, but that would be because their lens is starting to, that's just old age. That's when the lens is less flexible.
Got it.
I feel like
yeah, this is actually, I couldn't really see, but we're as a kid, you can just compensate so easily that people won't catch it unless you actually go to an eye doctor, which I never did. I never saw an optometrist until I was 40.
Wow.
Wild.
And I didn't know I couldn't see the whole time.
I haven't gone to the eye doctor in a while. But
I highly recommend that everyone take care of your eyes. Because there is no stronger driver of idiopathic pain. Now we're talking non-injury, not from disease, just pain can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? If it's there, if you have a visual issue, there is nothing that will drive your pain worse than that vision. Mm-hmm. In the hierarchy of PRI, vision is the top. Now most people don't have that, luckily. But when you do, you get that pain that just keeps jumping around. They can't feel anything properly. They feel their back. They feel their hip flexors.
And so people get this. I mean, at least I could be wrong, but like the reason is not just because it's like your eyes are like causing you pain somewhere. It's because your eyes are causing you to move in a way that causes tissues to be used improperly.
Yeah. So
that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, because your brain can't figure out where you are in space.
Yeah, spatial awareness.
Things get used wrong or overused.
Yeah, if you're not aware with where you're going, if you can't sense or you can't see a certain place, your brain's not going to want to go there. Yeah.
You're not going to move into that space.
Right.
And that's why it was so eye-opening when they were talking about left peripheral vision and that people drop it off because you're on your right side so much, you're constantly processing right peripheral vision and not as much on the left side. And even in the brain, there's more space devoted to right peripheral processing than left. And I remember the first time I was working with a guy, I had taken the visual integration course. I was working with the guy, how many right glute techniques I did with this guy, and I could not get abduction. He could not abduct. That right leg would not abduct. And I said, all right, let's just try something. And I put him into left stance, had him look to the left, breathe. He's noticing something out of his peripheral vision. We retested. He had full abduction of that right leg. And he's just like, what did you do? And I was like, I just know that some people don't stop using their peripheral vision. And his abduction changed immediately. He had full abduction. Where I did every technique I could possibly think of. Nothing would change that abduction. Because you will not overrule vision. You just won't. You can do every technique. I did these techniques every day for 6.5 years. Every day, and I'm psycho. I did every day. Like when I say every day, that wasn't 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I go all in. And I didn't know what a glute med felt until 4 years in when I finally felt my glute med. Before that, I'd just been feeling a TFL. And I kept saying, I don't think that's the right muscle because it was always cramping. Mm-hmm. But I could not overcome a visual system that would not allow me to ground appropriately. It would just keep dragging me back to the right.
Right. So everything you did, it's not that it didn't matter. I'm sure it was still helping you, but you
helping.
That was overriding it.
So it was overriding it. Yeah.
So is this something that, I mean, I don't know how rare it is that people have this vision source problem, but like, is this something that they would need to see an optometrist to identify, or is it something that you could test otherwise?
Well, it depends on the issue. I had a real visual issue. So there's a difference between people who have just become so patterned, and again, PRI is all about these patterns, that someone becomes so patterned that they stop using their left peripheral vision because you're not using it, so your brain just drops it off. It's like people who do so much up-close work and they're creating artificial nearsightedness. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's Japan or China. I saw a picture and they showed in class that they will put a barrier up between the book and the kid so they can't get too close.
That's interesting.
Because nearsightedness is growing so much because of all the screens.
Yeah. I needed glasses when I was probably 9. Mm. I started to not be able to see the board. And I used to read a lot when I was younger. And I don't know. I mean, it could just be totally arbitrary, or maybe it could have been because I was always constantly reading and it would be at nighttime. And so I'd be like up really close. I don't know if you could cause something like that within, you know, a couple years, probably 3 years or so. But I mean, my eyes got pretty bad. I shouldn't drive. I shouldn't function without my contacts in, to be honest.
Yeah, you do? Well, it would be an interesting.
No, I don't. I don't. Like, I can't. Literally, I'd probably crash into something.
Oh, well, it's always interesting if someone does wear contacts or glasses, is if you know how to do adduction drop tests or shoulder interpretation tests, test people with their eyewear in and without their eyewear and see if it changes.
Yeah,
my eyes are the same. Well, my right eye is a little bit worse, but
My stuff feels better without. I know that for sure. I feel like with glasses and contacts, I have to look down, but I'm only aware of that now because I've seen it in other people.
When
I don't wear my contacts, even though I can't see, I feel better. I feel like I can sense things around me better. It's very interesting.
I've seen that before. I was working with a friend of mine actually, and she had progressive lenses. Now, progressive lenses are problematic. I understand why people wear them because you don't want to have to keep changing glasses. The problem is, from what I understand, to make a progressive lens, to get 3 different powers, they have to eliminate peripheral vision at least a little bit. But now when you eliminate peripheral vision, you eliminate how your brain uses vision to place you in space. Oh. And so she'll test terribly. She tested better without any correction at all. And she tested, which meant her progressives were putting her into a state of fight or flight.
Yeah.
And that's what these tests are really indicating. When you move past the idea of just biomechanics, you realize that these people are living in a state of tension. That's all it is. It's tension management.
Yeah.
So her body relaxed when she took the progressives off, which technically she needed to see, but the progressives were taking out her peripheral vision, and she would lock up.
So it's very interesting, because in order to actually help somebody with their chronic pain, you have to get to this level of PRI, which is more of the neuro-based level. A lot of times you can do the bone muscle orthopedic stuff. I'd say more orthopedic, even though PRI isn't orthopedic, but in general, but you have to do the first couple of layers of PRI before the neuro stuff. But I am seeing that a lot of times it's deeper. With a lot of people, it's deeper, and you have to be able to help them with that. But there aren't that many resources. So it's just difficult. How are you able to, what have you done? I know you've been to Nebraska quite a few times, I'm guessing, for courses. And
yeah, it's, so you really can't separate the idea of the orthopedic mindset from the sensory mindset, because whether you realize it or not, even if you're still just thinking about orthopedics, like muscles and bones, as I say, the moment you have someone doing a technique, that whether that you realize it or not, that is sensory, because they know their foot is on the wall.
Yeah.
So the easiest, 80% of people, are the neuro part that they need is just sensing their left heel and their right arch and the position of their body, interoceptive sense, like having them realize that the left side of their body is doing one thing while the right side is doing something else. And now their brain just makes better sense of what the hell they're doing. And it just works better.
Yeah.
And you can get that from that I&I course, which is all about, instead of thinking of something as a left hamstring exercise, think of it as a sensory experience for that person's body to experience, or that person's brain to experience their body in a different way that allows them to feel a hamstring.
Yeah.
So you're changing the emphasis from muscles to the sensory input that the brain has to use, an interoceptive sense of their own body that their brain has to use to figure out where they are in space. And now the muscles turn on because, well, it's programmed from evolution.
Yeah.
But for the more complicated people, it's tough, you know, because you have to know what to look for. And if you don't know what to look for, then you don't know what they need. But if you really buy into the idea of this underlying pattern that is in everybody, that this right-sided dominance that's in everybody, once you start to really experiment, once you get someone neutral without doing a technique, all you have them do is be in what we call left stance and having them sense things like their left heel and their right arch and make them feel heavy on their left side. Maybe look to the left a little bit and you see their body weight shift to the left. And then you retest and they're neutral and you'd stretch nothing. Then you realize it's not about the muscle. The muscles will turn on when they have the proper input.
Right.
But again, all you did was inhibit a pattern. That's why they're neutral. I'm not saying they're stable and I'm not saying they're not going to go back into their pattern. I'm just saying you inhibited a pattern. So now they're neutral, because it's just called being on their left leg. They're living on their right leg without knowing it. Mm-hmm. That's the pattern they're in. So, you know, that is neuro. And that's really where you start to, most people don't have a visual issue. A lot of people need glasses, but that's not really a visual, that's a clarity issue.
Yeah.
Vision is how your brain is processing input, sensory, visual input, light, reflecting light, how your brain is making sense of that and interpreting where you are in space. That's really what the vision aspect is. But most people don't have that. I did, because I was uncorrected for 40 years and they believe that my brain was ignoring my left eye. So that was more of a binocular visual disorder. Those types of people will have major issues, but that's not something we can really deal with. I just know when they have that, their neck, lateral flexion, extension will not move. They'll have wacky test results that are going to be very confusing, and their neck will be, they might have hamstrings that can stretch to like 130 degrees. And that's always disconcerting to begin with. Yeah. And you're like, wow, this person's pretty flexible. I don't know. They seem pretty loose. And then you go to their neck, it's not going to move. They are so ungrounded and their brain is so frightened that they're just protecting. They are reflexively protecting their cranium via the neck. And visual people, true visual people, their neck will not move. They're going to be tight through that neck. You see that all the time. But again, that's not most people. So, but once you learn how to use I&I, that I&I class, once you start to use those references of, you know, left heel and right arch and just having people sense the position of their body when they're doing a technique, that's going to work for the vast majority of people.
And I want to talk a little bit about the techniques themselves. And I'm going to lead Megan through a couple in a bit after this podcast. But I think as a strength coach, I do movement coaching, obviously, but I think a lot of times people take these techniques and do them as a strengthening exercise. And I've talked to you about this before. So I want you to give your take on why they're techniques, they're not exercises, and just explain it a little bit.
Okay. Yes. So when you come from a strength and conditioning background, like I guess we all did to one degree or another, your mindset is exercise and lifting weights. Yeah. So anytime you see something that's looks like an exercise, you are already thinking about creating tension in your body to lift a weight. Because when you lift, you're creating tension to feel your muscles and lift weights. However, the reason that you're in pain from this PRI perspective is already because of tension.
Right.
You don't want to create more tension to try to overcome the underlying issue to begin with, which is tension.
Yeah.
So if you make a 90-90 hip shift and your mindset is, I want to make this hamstring burn, I want to feel the strongest contraction possible, you're in your own mind, forget about your body at that point, your mindset is completely off. You're making it into a strength training exercise, which is sympathetic in nature. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm being chased by a lion or a robber or a killer type of sympathetic, you know, but it's sympathetic nonetheless. And we're trying to get you into a parasympathetic state. So we're all very accustomed as lifters, especially power lifters, or any lifters really, we're very accustomed to feeling muscles in a sympathetic state. But that's the issue. You're living in a sympathetic state 24/7. You're lifting weights when you should be sleeping because you're lying down in extension. You don't even realize it because you're stuck in this pattern. You're fight or flighty. That's how you're living your life. Living in New York City, people in New York City, as you will know, have the worst PRI testing in the country.
SOPs. That's like all I ever see.
I have drive 15 minutes west to New Jersey and you'll find more just plain old left AICs.
Really? I tested Megan this morning and she was PEC, but it's pretty like balanced, more balanced, right?
Yep.
Probably most balanced I've seen in a long time. And it's just funny because in New York, everyone is a patho PEC.
It's the environment. And it's tension, 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 tension. That's what we're talking about. So you're in pain because of your levels of tension are so high, they're never resolved. You're never resolving your tension because everything you do in your life, make more money.
Yeah.
Buy better stuff. You're in New York City. Pollution, noise, lights, vibration that you're not even aware of.
Subway.
It's all tension and stress. But the point of the PRI techniques, the true point, is to get you out of a sympathetic state. It's to get you parasympathetic and experience your body in a parasympathetic state, which means that you can now breathe with your left diaphragm instead of using your neck, instead of using your back. If you are creating, so the take-home point is, if you're thinking of these techniques as strength training exercises, you already have the wrong mindset because you're trying to create tension to feel your muscles. When we want to decrease tension to allow you to feel your muscles in the more correct way, which will be a better state of, and will lead to a state of neutrality and get stable with the proper muscles. Otherwise, you're just going to turn on your back and your neck again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very important concept, I think, for trainers that listen that are trying to work their eye.
It took me many years to that's not something I got right away. Trust me, I was also thinking of these as exercises. And I was like, I want to feel this hamstring even harder. And then I realized that's not what it was about. But again, it's easier for me also because I've been through it personally. Like we were talking about knowing something intellectually and knowing something because you feel something. I've had that. I know what it's like to not be able to feel anything properly. And then because you put something over my eye or you took away my bite with a cheap $5 mouth guard, I now feel the earth completely differently than I did before.
Yeah.
Now I realize, oh, I was not grounded.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling these things. And now you feel it. Now you have something to compare it to. Yeah. It's hard when you're studying it because it's just, again, it's just so abstract. Like, what's grounded? What's I know where the ground is. I can feel it. If you were sensing the ground appropriately, your test would be neutral because it comes down to grounding. Space and ground, that's it. What does a human have to do? Stand up, move forward without falling. You got to strip away human concerns of like love and career and all this other stuff that, you know, happy life and health life. Like, Mother Nature cares nothing about any of that.
Yeah.
It's protect the structural integrity of that organism, which doesn't even know what death is. Your brain doesn't know what death is. No one knows it. Doesn't know, but it does know a threat.
Yeah.
And falling and getting hurt is a threat. So you got to stand up, walk forward, move, and not fall.
It's what we're built for.
Mm-hmm. What we're built for without, you know, taking away all the human emotion out of it.
Yeah.
Make it just purely like as science as possible.
Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
Survive. And don't structural integrity, maintain it. Otherwise, that's a threat to life.
That's
and
why protects, there's chronic pain.
You know, protect your organs and all the important things.
Absolutely. Yeah. What's the startle response? What are you doing? The neck.
Yeah.
It's all about the neck.
Yeah.
You got to keep that neck relaxed.
Okay. It's very, very interesting. I mean, we could talk about this stuff for days because it goes very deep and there's many layers. And this is just one layer.
Yeah. And then there's also obviously that the more spiritual sense of, not actually in a religious way, but like your meaning in life. Like, are you happy? Do you feel like you're wasting your life? You know, is your body reacting to some sort of mismatch between what you really want to do with your life, but what your conscious thoughts are saying, I should be doing this, but your body's saying you should not be doing this. You hate this.
I feel like the more like sensation and grounding somebody has, the more true to themselves they are too, versus, or like anxiety levels are much more decreased so that they can actually think clearly. I know that with myself.
Absolutely.
I'm just taking my own personal experience, but
well, sure, psychological grounding, that's a real thing. Well, of course it's a real thing. Psychologists talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
But then people, for some reason, this system differentiates between psychological grounding and physical grounding as if they're different. Negative energy is negative energy.
Yeah.
It's going to unground you.
Yeah. It's just super, super interesting. I mean, like we were talking about before in New York City, just all the stress.
Yeah.
And just if you leave New York City, you can feel different. You just feel different. And absolutely, everybody in New York says that. It's not like, that's not like a not known thing.
Correct.
I'm sure you feel very different on your journey now. So years later, what's your biggest takeaway to somebody maybe who's struggling with chronic pain? What could you tell them that could be inspiring?
So I often wonder what my results would have been if I was not a trainer and if I had just seen a PRI specialist, let's just say, if I had just seen that person, would I have had the same results?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because I had a life-changing, conscious-changing experience that also correlated with letting a lot of things go, you know, through meditation and Buddhist thought. Buddhist psychology is a lifesaver for me. And what's Buddhist psychology all about? Letting go.
Yeah.
A pattern. If you're unhappy, you're stuck in a negative thought cycle, a pattern of negative thinking. We're just talking about patterns here. It's really, I always tell people, if you want to understand PRI, read something like this. The Wise Heart. The Wise Heart. Read that. You want to understand PRI? Read this.
Have you read
it's the same thing. Let go of a pattern.
Have you read any Joe Dispenza? Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself is one.
Well, we'll link all of these books for the people listening because I know people like books.
Well, okay. So look.
What's another one?
Look at this book. The Origin of Asymmetry in Brains, Bodies, Atoms, and Cultures.
Is this asymmetry. Your
brain? Right hand, left hand. Yep.
Wow.
It's there. Asymmetry is the norm. It's not.
Yeah.
Symmetry is not normal. It exists, but asymmetry is way more normal. How your unconscious mind rules your behavior. You'll find PRI in this.
Wow.
Like, yes. What? Are we talking about adduction and abduction and internal rotation? And no, we're talking about how the human experience truly exists. How you hold things together. Mm-hmm. How you hold your body together. How you hold your life together. How you create tension. Okay, tension goes up. Can you decrease your tension? Can you resolve that tension? If not, you're going to be a wreck. You will be a PEC. You will. If you cannot resolve your tension in your life, you'll be a patho PEC. This is your brain on music. What is walking? It's tempo, it's music, gait, rhythmic, basal ganglia. You'll find it in here. Flow, great book.
That's
want to go parasympathetic? You go into flow.
It's very interesting because you can attack this from so many different ways.
So many different ways.
It's not just...
Eye of the vortex. Read this. It's neurology. Read this. Fixed action patterns. He talks about imaging, internal imaging, external imaging. And when your brain cannot match up the internal image with the external image, well, you start to compensate.
You become a PC.
Okay, so my next question.
You trip and fall. Because what is walking? Walking is planned falling and catch, fall and catch. What's a trip? It's an unplanned fall.
Yeah. Well, that's babies. When you watch a baby take their first few steps, they're literally tipped forward trying to just catch themselves.
It's all falling. I have that
book. Why zebras don't get ulcers.
That's a great book.
Yeah. I mean, this is all PRI because PRI is not a discipline. PRI is just explaining how humans exist, stabilize, and move in space and time. It's explaining it and says this right side changes things because it's dominant. You just got to get your left side back into it. It's not a system. It's not. It's an explanation of how we actually are and says this is how you can restore balance back and forth.
Yeah.
The Master and His Emissary. Read that book. It's all PRI and it's just about the brain. Yeah. The right side and the right and left hemisphere are not structurally the same. Forget about having different, functions. Structurally, the right hemisphere and left hemisphere are not the same. Asymmetry is literally built into our brain, the structure of it. So you can look at PRI through so many different lenses to make it more understandable. Otherwise, it's just going to be this abstract, myokinematic restoration type stuff.
Yeah.
All these other books, all these other disciplines, all you have to see is the pairs of opposites, light and dark, up and down, man, woman, whatever it's going to be. There's always two, left and right. Mm-hmm. And when that left and right get out of balance, things go wrong.
Yeah.
So I can already kind of guess this by all the books that you have, but what's something that you do every day to move your brain and body or both?
So not gonna lie, can't run. My body does not like running. So I will feel my right hamstring and I know it's just, however, I can walk great distances. So at this point in my life, I walk a lot. I try to get in the woods as much as I can. And I read a lot. That's really it. So again, I'm pretty simple at this point in my life. I know what I like. I like my books, my coffee, my trees and my birds. Not my birds, but the birds outside. I'm strongly considering, joining some sort of tree conservation or tree growing organization because I think, the West is burning, Brazil is burning, everything's burning and all. We need more trees. So, I'm a big lover of nature. And I think when you upset that balance of nature, we're not destroying the environment. We are changing the environment. We are destroying ourselves. The environment will last. It was just going to be in an altered state, but we're just destroying our own habitats. Life is going to be unlivable in half the world within 50 or 60 years because of extreme heat. You think there's a refugee issue now? Think about when all these places inside our own country, it's going to be so hot. So I'm a big fan of trees. And I think
good for your visual system.
It is being out. Yes, nature is really important to restore balance to our body. So that's what I like to do.
Yeah. Well, this was so fun. Thank you so much. How can people find you?
The easiest way is just type my name into Google, into the YouTube. I guess that would be the easiest.
YouTube has amazing videos. So I'm going to link your YouTube. Make sure for people listening to check out your videos because you're putting up some really good stuff.
You explain things very well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Explanations are amazing. I sometimes listen to them more than once so that I can really drive in the message.
That's an obsession. It's my obsession. So,
Well, it's helpful for us.
I do my best.
Feeling it and not just intellectually knowing it. So you can tell.
Feeling it is always, that's why if someone really wants to understand this, get checked out by someone who knows what they're doing. Yeah. Get tested by someone who's taken many, many, many courses.
Years of training.
You're going to experience it a different way than even within 5 years. 5 years is not that much.
Yeah.
It's almost like a rule of thumb. Like your first 5 years, you're still trying to figure things out. And then eventually you have these aha moments, but have an appointment with someone who really knows what they're doing. They've been doing it a long time and you'll experience it in a different way.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And
you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I wish you continued success.
Thank you.
Same to you.
All right. Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.